Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us tonight at the Wise Women Media, the radio show. We're with you every Friday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. To get more information about our show or to see the archives and check out our amazing guests, you can see our website at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. We also have a list of sponsors there, links to our social networks, and we want to give a shout out to Here Be Monsters, which gives us this block of time to broadcast in every week. And also, if you feel so inclined and you want to keep us on the air, feel free to fund us at GoFundMe. The link is there on the website. We are independent media, and we are not corporate sponsored or supported. So without further ado, I just wanted to let you all know I don't have my guest available yet. I'm not sure if she's running late or if she will be with us tonight at all. I wasn't able to establish any contact with her tonight, so I am waiting. But in the meantime, I have some music queued. I did want to give one announcement in particular before I start any more music. Tuesday, June 10th at 9 a.m., this would be at the Collier County Commissioners Boardroom, Building F, third floor, Collier County Government Center, 3299 Tamiami Trail East in Naples, Florida. Be there. We need everyone to fill the commissioners' meeting Tuesday, June 10th, to urge the commissioners to immediately challenge the DEP's consent order on the Collier Hogan well that was illegally fracked near the Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary. On April 22nd and May 13th, the commissioners voted unanimously to publicly challenge the consent order rather than pursue private settlement. Now the DEP is pressuring them to back off. At the last meeting, we urged the commissioners not to take a private settlement that would wrap the entire incident in secrecy and exclude citizens and groups like the Conservancy from meaningful participation in what could be a public proceeding based on transparency and community input. Experts have discovered an improperly plugged well only 150 feet from the horizontal directional drilling that might have already compromised the drinking water in the Naples area there by the Corkscrew Swamp. Since drilling fluids tend to migrate and surface in uncapped wells and other irregularities that demand the close scrutiny of an administrative hearing. You can see more on Facebook. This event is posted in the Stone Crab Alliance, which is a group on Facebook, and it consists of people from Naples area that are working to stop the fracking near the Everglades and near the last refuge for the Florida panther. So I will cue up some more music, waiting on our guest. She has not arrived yet. So let me go ahead and cue up something interesting that I heard today. This is a local guy named Selwyn Birchwood, and tonight at Skipper Smokehouse in Tampa, he is doing a CD release party. This is one of the favorite songs that I heard on the radio just earlier today. It was a live showcase, musicians showcase. So this is Selwyn Birchwood with Hoodoo Stew.
Let's see what you got. That's the one they tack on to. one of the great pleasures of my life right now, you guys.
Any day.
guest will be coming on in just a few minutes, but I'm going to queue up one more song till we get her on, and we have almost an hour and a half to speak with her. So bear with us just a moment while we get this all sorted out, and the next song is Anna Popovic, Can You Stand the Heat?
First impression, baby, can you stand the heat? Try to speak with a dry throat, cause it's still a shaky knee. Boy, it's all so insane, so carefully, I have left the phrase. When I come across, as I go to die, I'll sleep in the beat.
Okay, one moment. We are getting this sorted out. Are you there, Suzanne?
I am here.
Okay, great.
I am so sorry. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, well, I figure you got tied up with kids or, you know, plus there's a time change we're dealing with. There's a three-hour time change.
I know, but I've never done this, and I apologize so greatly. And to the audience, I am so, so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Well, we've got quite a bit of time because we've got 2 hours scheduled, so we didn't lose too much time. I just want to formally introduce you and let you tell the listeners exactly how they can find you online, because your news sites are absolutely spectacular, and, of course, they're news stories that people generally aren't going to hear through the mainstream media at all. So tell the listeners how they can find you, and then we can talk about some of the stories.
Absolutely. Hello, folks. My name is Suzanne Posel. I am the chief editor of OccupyCorporatism.com. You have probably run into my articles. They're reposted all over the Internet. I also am the CEO and founder of Foundation Media, which is a news agency, and the online publication is the usindependent.com. I started the US Independent because, being a journalist, I understand and appreciate how important factual information is, and evidence to show exactly what is happening, and not conjecture and not theory, even though theory can lead to evidence, is extremely important, because if we want to change what is going on in our world, we're going to have to deal with the actual facts. So that is what the U.S. Independent is about. We have 23 contributors. You've probably heard about them. Thomas Sheridan, Dane Wigington, Christoph Lehman, Stephen Roberts, Vinnie Eastwood, and many others. We have 3 Juris Doctorate attorneys who write for our publication. And I'm happy to be back. Anita is a good friend of mine, and I'm just thrilled to be back on your show. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being a part of the show. And I figured we would start off, I mean, when I go to the websites, there's just so much to read. And lately, as we all know, through the news, through just watching CNN, and I like to see what CNN is going to talk about. So that really is the only reason that I put on something that's mainstream media, so I can kind of hear how they're going to direct and redirect their lies. But one thing that's interesting is to see just how they put those lies in motion and how they repeat them. So they become, you know, the more repetitive it is, the more people are going to think on that versus trying to do any kind of critical thinking. So I think what we could open up with is what maybe 5 of the top stories that you think are the most important that Americans need to hear that they're not hearing from the mainstream media, or they're getting them in a twisted, you know, twisted, convoluted way. So I'm going to just open it up to that, and that might take you a long time to answer that, but but here goes.
Well, you know, I watch the Colbert Report and the Daily Show. It's remnants from when before I woke up, and I know that it's a game, and I know that they're acting. But, you know, sometimes it's funny to hear it and see it portrayed that way. So don't feel bad about watching CNN, because, you know, that's my dirty little secret.
Right. And I watch those shows, too. You know, and usually it depends on the guests. But if I want a good belly laugh before I go to sleep, I usually listen to some late-night comedy, because the media has got, well, the media's gotten pretty funny, too. So. You know, but yeah, I try to actually watch something that's going to make me laugh, because what's happened to our country, really, when I sit and think about it, has made me so sad, especially over the past couple months, and especially with this returning soldier, how the story has just gotten so twisted and so convoluted, and I feel so bad for him and his family. I mean, that's just one story that we're dealing with. But you go ahead and tell us what you think Americans should know, the five top ones.
Well, let's start with psychiatry.
Okay.
Now, they've been trying to demonize people since they started in the asylums using Thorazine. Before that, they were using all sorts of torture to prove that there is something wrong with our brains that causes mental disease. Unfortunately, using the scientific method, they have never been able to prove that there is mental disease in the brain or the body, period. Now, listening to me say that, you're going to say, but Suzanne, I've seen the MRIs and I've seen the brain scans. Well, folks, if you're walking down the street and I start snapping pictures, and we go back and look at those pictures, and one picture it's going to look like your left leg is up, and the next picture it's going to look like your right leg is up. And that is the same methodology that they use. That's not scientific. It's an assumption that because a part of the brain lights up in one picture and doesn't light up in another picture, or that another part of the brain lights up in another picture, that this is somehow indicative of ADHD. ADHD was made up.
Right.
The gentleman who did so recently died, and he told Der Spiegel in his last interview that he made up the disease. It happened to coincide with the same time that Merck had a little thing that they made out of speed called Ritalin, and they were trying to figure out who to market it to, and they chose to market it to children because they had ADHD.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So, as far as gun control goes with psychiatry, I wrote an article about who is really behind gun control, because there's a lot of theories.
And my theory is that I really do believe they are trying to take our guns, and I really do believe that the Second Amendment is in the Constitution for a reason, because taking the guns was a normal thing in our country during the colonial times, and that's what King George was doing, was taking the guns away from the colonists, which without them they could not survive. But they needed the guns to protect themselves from a tyrannical government, and that's why the Second Amendment is second only after the First Amendment. So, am I on the right track? Oh, I lost her. Hello?
Hello.
Okay, I lost you. But how much of that did you hear, and do you think I'm on the right track about the guns?
I didn't actually hear a word of it.
Okay, well, let me start over. I knew we were going to have technical problems. I think we're coming into a Mercury retrograde, so... So I think we were, you know, I had technical problems just trying to get the show going tonight. So what I was saying was, I really, as far as gun control, I really believe that there's a lot at play here, but the main thing is the government wants our guns. But this really is a repeat And it's funny because I consider myself a leftist person, if you were going to judge my politics, but yet I'm not with the left on this issue. I believe that the Second Amendment is there because of the history of what happened with Americans in colonial times when King George was trying to take their guns, which, you know, of course the colonists would not have survived without their guns, but the guns also protected them from the tyrannical government that King George had put upon them. So the fact that they had guns and didn't give them up was the reason why America as a country exists today. But the Second Amendment was so important, that is why it was second after the First Amendment. Am I on the right track with that?
Well, what I see, and I agree with what you're saying, but what I see is the new eugenics, which
okay.
is psychiatry. They have been wanting for a very long time to get rid of the undesirables, and they focused on Hispanics and blacks, because they're undesirable. They're of a lower IQ. There was a study that was put out in the 80s that came out, and there was a book that came out with it that said that black people have a lower IQ. They're genetically predisposed to be stupid, and it caused all this big stir. And Tom Brokaw was talking about it on the nightly news. And they have turned this into, there's something wrong with your brain. That's why Obama has sunk $4.6 billion into the brain mapping project with the National Institutes of Health, with the DOD. And what I saw when the Santa Barbara shooting happened, okay, and a week later, on Capitol Hill, House Representative Mike Thompson, who is a former psychiatrist for 3 decades,
wow,
was pushing a bill he co-authored that, quote, would inject new money into the coffers of law enforcement attempting to prevent gun violence by the mentally ill. Okay?
Right.
Now, when I looked at Thompson's biography on the government website, okay, the House website, it said, quote, he relies on his 3 decades as a psychologist to advocate for meaningful reforms in the U.S. healthcare system. As one of the only of a handful of members of Congress with a background in healthcare, psychiatry, Tim quickly established himself as a leader on this issue. Well, I'll tell you in a minute why he would have established himself as a leader. He is the co-chair of the Mental Health Caucus and the founding member of the GOP Doctors Caucus, giving him a platform to educate other members of Congress on the public, or and the public, on ways to make mental health care more affordable and accessible for all families, end quote. Now, in 2013, he received over $170,000 from the healthcare industry, from pharmaceutical corporations, from HMOs, and from hospitals and nursing homes.
Wow.
So this gentleman is a psychiatrist sitting in the House of Representatives pushing a bill a week after the Santa Barbara shooting, and I realized that there were other weapons involved, for mental health care to be more affordable and accessible to us, because we're mentally ill, folks. Even though, like I said, there is no scientific evidence that there is mental disease in the brain or the body. They've never found it using the scientific method. They found it using other ways to doctor information, like looking at a brain scan and saying, oh, there's a light here in the left, but when we look at the next one, the light is gone and it's down on the bottom right. That doesn't mean anything. It's like the analogy I gave you. If I took pictures of you walking, it would look like at some point you were floating in the air, but it's just because I was snapping shot after shot after shot of you walking. If I took those pictures out of succession and pointed out certain pictures to a person who didn't see the entire shooting where I was taking pictures of you walking, they wouldn't know what they were looking at. It would take them a while to figure out what they were looking at. That's the methodology behind the brain scans and the MRIs. Okay. Now, what we do have is an exorbitant amount of studies and documentation showing that the symptoms that we consider psychotic happen after people take the psychotropic antidepressant drugs.
Wow. Okay. So that's kind of like people with Alzheimer's and... You know, really, their symptoms become worse when they're taking the Alzheimer's medicine.
Exactly. And Alzheimer's yeah. is a toxicology problem. You have too much aluminum in your body.
Right. Right.
If you flush the aluminum out of your body, you will heal. Your brain is plastic. It's malleable. People who do crossword puzzles over the course of their life, and they've done studies to show that elderly who start using the internet and learn how to engage social media and use text messaging, that it rewires their brains and they're able to have more cognitive abilities than they were prior to using that.
That's interesting because I've noticed that myself with patients that if they're on the computer, especially the elders, the problem is a lot of the medicines that they take makes them extremely lethargic. So they, you know, trying to get them to actually do something, read a book or watch a television program all the way through or, you know, do some artwork or something, that's the hard part because the medicine makes them, dare I say it, into zombies, you know, really very, very zombieific. I can't explain
Absolutely.
It any
like
other way.
It's like a catatonic state.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Now, less than a week after the shooting, Thompson proposes this bill, and it details how outpatients would have been involuntarily committed from purchasing or prohibited from purchasing firearms by a court that has deemed them dangerous, and this would be to improve the system that is used to report potentially dangerous individuals to the National Instant Crime Background Check System and stop those convicted from stalking and domestic abuse. And that's the catch-all. You know, they have to add that in. The point is to get people, look, folks, if you've ever been diagnosed as depressed, that's the easiest one.
Right.
Then you would be considered potentially dangerous because at one point in time, if you were taking a psychotropic drug to treat that depression, you would be labeled as potentially dangerous and not allowed to purchase a firearm.
So wouldn't that, I mean, in these days, wouldn't that encompass most Americans?
Absolutely. Think about it. That's why I use depression as an example. Everyone at some point is depressed. It's natural. Maybe someone died. Maybe you moved to a new location. Maybe you lost your job. And maybe you're having trouble with your friends or your family. Maybe something's going on. It makes you a little bit sadder than normal. It's a period of time. It's a phase. It usually passes.
Right.
In the world that we live in, we have a huge problem, though. We live in a segregated, isolated existence where we facilitate what would be actual engagement with each other on social media. The problem with that is when 90% or more of our communication is understood nonverbal, then we have a hard time relating to people when we're not in front of them. And when we move toward a normalcy of dealing with people that we're not in front of and we can't see their physical features, then we are restricted to tone of voice and assumptions. And since we normally don't know intimately the people we're dealing with on the other end of that screen, we're at a disadvantage and we feel alone and we feel isolated. Even when we're at home with our family, when we're constantly engaging in social media and trying to interact in that way instead of going out and meeting people like we used to before the internet.
Right.
Go ahead.
I remember, you know, when meetups first started, because the meetups were exactly that. It was a social network that encouraged people to go out, you know, and bound together by a common interest, whatever that might be, weaving baskets or, you know, playing mahjong or whatever it was. You were meeting people face to face. So that's one of the things that I've enjoyed about, you know, being involved with meetup for several different things that I do, is that I'm actually meeting people and still using that social, that it's a social gathering, but using those social skills to interact with people in person, because so much of communication, at least it used to be, nonverbal. And now we're just writing and sharing pics on Facebook, and so many people are just doing that, just that, and not getting up away from the computer to actually interact with someone else.
That is the main problem here. When we deal with how we feel about things, when we are constantly in a state of emotional upheaval, I'll give you an example. The psychology department researchers for Florida International University and psychologists from Miami Children's Hospital, where my mother worked there,
right,
claims that children who witnessed the Boston bombing news, the coverage of the Boston bombing, were more likely to develop post-traumatic stress disorder than children who had not seen the event. So now here's the catch, folks. Here's the catch with psychiatry, because they don't tell you these things. This was an online survey. And I'm going to stop right here, and I just want you to think about this, folks. You go to a psychiatrist, and you sit down and talk to them. And a lot of times, it's 10 to 15 minutes.
Right.
And you fill out a questionnaire, and they read the questionnaire, and they get out their book, the DSM-5, and they go down the list of symptoms, and they pick out what they think is most likely your problem. And they write you a prescription. Now, if you thought you had cancer, would you go to a physician who sat you down and had you fill out a list of questions, and then after 10 or 15 minutes of talking to you, wrote you a prescription for chemotherapy?
Yeah, that's scary, isn't it?
Isn't it? There's no blood drawn at the psychiatrist's office. There's no study done on what your physiological makeup is, or what your genetic predispositions might be, what your foundational biochemistry is, none of that. There's a gentleman with a sheet of paper and a couple of questions and a book and an assumption and his opinion. And then you take this drug, Paxil, Zoloft,
oh God,
Prozac, Ambient, any of them that you can think of, and look at the insert, folks. Just to give you an example, on the insert from Gardasil, vaccine Gardasil, it states that it has never been proven to that this vaccine prevents reproductive cancers of any kind. Well, that's the only reason why you would be shooting that stuff into your body. So if it doesn't prevent reproductive cancers, then why are you taking it? So we have boatloads of information from people who are taking. Just to give you an example, when they were doing the initial trials to get Prozac approved by the FDA, 99% of the people dropped out of the trial within 2 weeks because they could not handle the effects of the drug.
Wow. So what can the normal person do when they feel depressed? Do they need to just take St. John's Wort or something else?
St. John's Wort is effective, but for most people, after about 3 weeks, you have to come off of it because you build up a tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not clinically trained.
Right.
So this is just my opinion. But you need to think about what you're eating and how much exercise you're getting. You need to think about how you're reacting to life, because as we react more and more, we get more and more frightened, more and more paranoid, more and more upset, more and more scared. We need to think about other ways of dealing with our problems, because the ways in which we were taught facilitate a slave mentality. Everywhere from the Pavlovian ringing of the bell in your schools when you were a kid, all the way up to, unfortunately, some of the things that our parents, or maybe the majority of the things that our parents taught us. And God love them. They were doing the best that they could. And I'm a parent. I'm doing the best I can, too. But some of the ways in which they taught us to accept the way we're treated, accept what happens just because I said so. Life isn't fair. Who said life is fair? My mother always used to say that.
Oh, yeah. My mom used to say that, too.
You know what? Life isn't fair. So what? My life is great. And it's not always great. But I choose to not react to the situations that are happening. I take myself out of it, and it's not easy. And folks, if you're committed to something, it takes about 28 to 29 days to rewire your brain to a new pattern, a new behavior. So it just takes commitment. If you're so committed to coming home and de-stressing by popping open a Coke or a beer and watching the news, then you can recommit yourself to taking some time to yourself, maybe take a bath, maybe sit in a dark room and let it go. Breathe it out. Listen to relaxing music. Get out the crayons and the paper and play with your kids if they're that young. Find something that maybe get out the crayons and the paper for yourself. Maybe take up painting. Something that reminds you of the happiness that you once had. Maybe go back to something in your childhood that you always thought you never could do, but go ahead and try to do it. Take up a hobby. Build up your self-esteem. Refuse to accept abuse on any level, from personal relationships, from professional relationships, from governmental relationships. Refuse. That's not how I operate. Choose to do things that empower you.
In the long run, do you think the guns will be taken from the people? Do you think they'll just be legislated away bit by bit?
What I'm seeing is the movement toward making as many of us mentally ill as possible. And therefore, the issue of gun control becomes moot. Because if they can make it legislatively possible that mentally ill people cannot own a gun, then as soon as they diagnose you, you now have certain rights revoked. And it would, and to the general public, that would make sense because they want to be safe. They want to know that if they leave their car door unlocked, or that someone's not going to break into their house and murder them. So the public is behind this, and even though they're coming for them too, everyone is a victim of this at some point. Then gun control becomes a moot point. Revoking the Second Amendment becomes a moot point, because if we're all mentally ill, then it's symptomatic of another problem, and gun violence just or gun control just becomes part of how they're dealing with that other problem.
Right, right. It's mind-boggling. So Americans, as a general, we've got a lot of personal inner work to do. Most Americans need that.
I think we have a self-esteem problem. I don't know how it is in other countries, even though I have friends in many parts of the world. But I know in this country it's rampant, that we think that it's okay to have a dramatic fight with our boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife and then dramatically make up because we see it on TV, because we see it in the movies. you know, he doesn't love us unless he covers our bed with roses, rose petals, and sings outside our window. A man who loves you is there and changes dirty diapers and cooks the meals when you can't and provides not only monetarily but emotionally and physically to his entire family and doesn't leave.
Right.
That is a good man.
Right.
It doesn't need the roses and the wedding, you know, the music in the background and all of the drama. The drama is what we have agreed with when we watch these movies and we watch these television shows, that that's how it should be. We've also been programmed to think of men as bumbling idiots. Think about Home Improvement, that show.
Oh, yeah.
Or Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah, and it's funny because I never really watched those shows. I didn't like them. I didn't find them realistic or I didn't relate to them. And it's funny because I really can't watch anything I can't relate to. Of course, unless it's comedy or something, you know, something that's going to crack me up. Or music. Music is another thing that I will watch on television, but... you know, it's funny how those shows have become so popular on television.
It's a woman who's a professional, and she's good at her job, and then she works all day out of the home, and she still finds time to take care of the kids and clean up after her husband's mess because he's always blowing something up or doing something wrong or getting the kids almost killed, and she's got to clean up the mess. And thank God she's such a good woman to stay with such a bumbling idiot like this man. He's so lucky because she could have anybody that she wants, or the King of Queens. Remember that show?
Yeah.
That's another great example.
Yeah, that's...
It is demasculinized these men, and they don't understand where they're supposed to be. So, unfortunately, we've got a self-serving prophecy here where men don't stay around, and children are growing up in homes without both parents, which is essential because the daughter looks at the husband or her father and says, this is how a husband is supposed to act when he watches... or when she watches her father with her mother. And the son, and through the mother, the daughter learns how to be a woman and how to be a wife. And the son learns how to be a man through his father and how to be a husband through the relationship that he watches. And this is how we're supposed to learn. We're also supposed to have our elderly and our family around us, not across the country or across the world. We're supposed to be able to get together and hang out with our family, not just twice a year, but at any time, and learning from those relationships. And that's how we develop the things that we appreciate, the things that we don't appreciate, the things that we accept, the things that we don't accept. So here we have a situation where most of the marriages are breaking up. Most kids or even if they are married, a lot of people are choosing not to get married and have multiple children out of wedlock, or at least one. And these children don't know how they're supposed to be.
Right.
They don't know how they're supposed to act.
And there's no critical, there's very little critical thinking. It's very difficult to get the kids out of groupthink. And I find that lately, the more adjusted children that I happen to meet are being homeschooled. They're not part of the public school system. What do you think about that?
I decided that I was going to continue to homeschool my son. From the day he was born, I was teaching him things. That's what I thought. I've got this little person here. I might as well teach them some stuff about life and culture and history and science, because what else am I going to do with this little person? And when he was about four and a half, the question was, are we sending him to kindergarten? So I went and spoke to teachers and administrators, and I was disgusted by the devaluation of education in the public education system.
Mm.
I decided, well, I'll just continue doing what I'm doing. I do look at the curriculum that they're learning. from the school board. You can get it online. However, I think that there's a boatload of information that's missing from there, so I just add that back in. And so my son, who's 7.5, is learning on a fourth grade level. If he were in school, he would have had to have been enrolled in fourth grade at 7.5.
Do you promote this with other people in your community?
I have had some really bad experiences with when I was living in Oregon. That's when my son was just about to go into kindergarten. And I tried to join some of the groups and hang out with the other homeschooling mothers. And, you know, some of them have the 5 days a week, everybody shows up at somebody else's house. And it's good because you learn other people's rules and other people's regulations and what they tolerate and what they don't tolerate. And it's different in every home and it's different with every person. However, there was a huge push toward religious indoctrination, which I've been studying religion and most religions since I was about 12 years old. So, and I'm constantly learning, but I don't think that absolutes when it comes to religion or science is a good thing to instill in a child. Because there are no absolutes. And most science and religion, in science they call it a theory.
Right.
In religion they call it faith.
Right.
That's when you have to become a frog and leap from one lily pad to the next. So I call it leapfrogging. Because at some point you have to jump and just believe. Well, I would love to, but I've believed a lot of things in the 36 years that I've been on this planet, and every time I believed it, I was sure that that was how it is. And life has a funny way of showing you that when you are staunch in your beliefs, then you are missing the point. So I didn't continue that when we moved to Washington State. I did not continue the homeschooling with other parents in the area. I live in Port Orchard now. So what I do instead is take him to the libraries for story time. My kids have friends in the neighborhood, and they play at, there's like 6 or 7 playgrounds that we rotate every other day and go to. So I get the socialization for them that way. But I don't want either way indoctrination to be happening. I'd really want my children to have as open of a mind as possible, because, like I said, when you get new information and you refuse it, that's cognitive dissonance.
Right.
When you get a new information and you consider it, that is a step toward knowledge and wisdom, and that's where I want my children to go. I want them to know what they know, but I want them to be wise enough to know that they don't know what they know, and to allow new information, shift their paradigm, and continue on their merry way.
And then the fact that they can critically think and judge whether this information has anything to do with them, or whether they need to act on it, or whether it's true or whether it's false. This is what we were taught when we were younger, but it's not being taught now, which is quite frightening.
It is. Parents don't have time. You know, that's the complaint I always hear. Well, I don't have time to do this. Like with eating healthy, I don't have time, and I can't afford it. So I was on Jack Blood's show a couple of weeks ago, and I said, well, folks, because he brought that up, you know, it's costly and who has the time to cook the food. I said, well, take your health insurance that you pay every month. Let's say it's $200 or $150, whatever it is. Reallocate those funds back to your grocery bill. Buy better food. Now you've got an extra, if it's $200 a month, you've got an extra $50 a week to buy better food, to buy good supplements to take, to afford a pass to your state parks so that you can go jogging and hiking. And the kids love that, by the way, and it's great time spent. And
oh,
it's
yeah.
learning. Yeah. It's educational, too.
Exactly.
You know, my husband the other day was building paper airplanes with our son, and they were flying them in the backyard, and my husband took the time to teach him about aerodynamics and physics and geometry while they were building these airplanes so they could build them better. Each airplane got better and better, and he explained why this is aerodynamically sound as opposed to the one that we just flew. So my son learned a little bit about all of these different fields of mathematics and science just by building paper airplanes and shooting them off in the backyard.
Oh, that's cool. And you know what? It helps us break free as well, you know, which is nice. You know, we're breaking, you know, we're working, we're going through some tough times. It helps us exercise being a child, you know, and taking it
exactly.
back to simple things with our families and doing these things with our children. Wonderful. It's wonderful. Now, why don't we move on to... Let's talk about Bergdahl, since that was such a big story. What's your take on that whole scene?
Well, I found it extremely fortuitous or serendipitous that the VA scandal came out and all of a sudden we've got this situation and the gentleman standing in the Rose Garden and he's got the beard and everyone was comparing him to a terrorist because he had a beard that was scraggly. So I put together a little picture with him on one side and the members of Duck Dynasty on the other, and I said, hello, some people's beards grow funny. It has no bearing. We don't understand what's going on. There's so much of this that is not being reported, probably because it's a national security issue, which I know everybody's saying, they say that that's a catch-all. But this, to me, is a PR stunt.
Right.
Because Obama needs the approval of the Democratic Party to be raised. He's done such a terrible job, and he's got such a low approval rating for most of his president, at least his second presidency, that if they have any hope of putting a Democrat in the office, they have got to raise the Democratic approval rating, and he is the mascot, the spokesperson for the Democratic Party right now. So to me, it was a PR stunt.
And what about Bergdahl himself? I was talking to somebody about it just the other day, and I was saying there is absolutely no way of knowing where Bergdahl went, and if he was a conscientious objector, what is the big deal about that? Because there is it's already written in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ, about conscientious objectors and what how you actually go through the process of being a conscientious objector. So I couldn't understand why he was criminalized if he wanted to leave the military and why that was such a bad thing. The other thing I was telling somebody, I said he was raised in a Christian household. He could have been proselytizing somebody. He could have been meeting a girl. There's a million things he could have been doing when he walked off. And now they're basically trying to find proof that he walked off, leaving his gun behind, his armor behind. He took his camera and some water bottles and a few other things. But I thought, you know, only he knows why he walked away. And he did document it in a letter to his father. But being a conscientious objector does not mean that he's treated like shit when he comes back. And, I'm very, very surprised that McCain, especially being a prisoner of war himself, that ended up being released under some pretty sticky negotiations, would be such a chicken hawk over this. So that's my say.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And to address John McCain, I don't know if, have you ever heard of the Council for National Policy?
No.
Most people haven't. They're actually a secret group, not like the Bilderberg group that, you know, posts their, you know, everybody finds out where their meeting is and shows up with their bullhorn. This is actually a really real secret group. And I am looking into them because someone gave me their website on Facebook, one of my readers, and I get so much stuff in emails and on Facebook that I don't always have the time to look up everything and research it, but keep sending it to me because this gentleman who sent me this it blew my head off.
Right.
And we were just talking about guns, but it changed the way I think about things. It changed what I woke up to. It really made me appreciate critical thinking. I have a paralegal degree, so I'm naturally a researcher. And it really made me hunker down the idea that I really need to, and folks, you really need to. If you question something, go look it up. Okay? If it doesn't feel right to you, go look it up. And don't trust your trusted person that you've branded loyalty to because you believe in them. I'm talking about hard evidentiary facts, okay? Not someone's opinion. So the Council for National Policy is a secret organization for the conservative right wing of the bird. The CFR, the Council for Foreign Relations, is the Democratic, the left wing of the bird. Now, the CNP, the Council for National Policy, was founded in 1981 by Reverend Tim LaHaye.
I remember him. He's the author, right?
Left Behind series, right?
Yeah.
He was given money by Reverend Mooney, if you remember from the 80s.
Right.
He was actually christened on Capitol Hill by congressmen and House representatives at the time, complete with a coronation ceremony, and they put a crown on his head and his wife's head. And then later on they said, oh, well, we didn't know what we were attending, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so Reverend Mooney put up an exorbitant amount of money, also is the founder of the Washington Times.
Right. I knew about that after living in D.C. Yeah.
And there are some other incredible people that if you are consider yourself a Republican or conservative, libertarian, a right-wing extremist or a right-wing conspiracy theorist, or this, you're going to want to listen to me because I'm going to say some names that are associated with the CNP, the Council for National Policy. And this is on my website. And you can look it up, and please click through the source links because I want you to see it. And go beyond me because I'm still researching this, and there's a lot here. So the original founders, the people who put up the money to start this organization, one of them is the Christian conservative political organizer for the Heritage Foundation, Nelson Baker, the son of H.L. Hunt, the oil billionaire.
Right.
And John Bircher William Size. Now, when they set this up, the founders described the Council for National Policy as, we are seeking to create a Christian conservative alternative to what we believe is the liberalism of the Council on Foreign Relations. And their mission statement includes agendas such as, quote, to acquaint our members with those in position of leadership in our nation. Okay, so their members go and infiltrate people of positions of leadership in our nation in order that mutual respect be fostered, to encourage the exchange of information concerning the methodology of working with the system, to promote the values and ends sought by individual members. Translation, they go in, infiltrate, they get them to be their best friends, and then they indoctrinate them on the agendas of the Council for National Policy through monetary means, through coercion, whatever you can think of. They are a 501c3, so they're a nonprofit corporation. A nonprofit
right.
organization is still a corporation. And interestingly, their political spending is omitted from public record. I went to Open Secrets, and I could not find anything on how much is donated to them and how much they donate out, because when you are a nonprofit organization, you have to donate a certain amount of money every year to like-minded nonprofit organizations. So we don't know how much they're getting in and how much they're putting out.
That's interesting.
Yes, and that is actually not okay. You have to, every corporation, including nonprofits, have to file their donations and how much money they spent and all of their financials every year.
Yeah,
it's
that's
part
the
of
law.
Maintaining their status.
That's the law, yeah.
Yes. So members of the Council for National Policy include Richard Allen, National Security Advisor under Reagan, John Ashcroft, former U.S. Attorney General, Steve Baldwin, who is currently the CEO and President of the Council for National Policy, Gary Bauer from Family Research Center.
Let me stop you just for a second. Steve Baldwin from the actors, the actor
no,
brothers?
No.
Because I was thinking of the Baldwin brothers.
No.
And
I actually had to make sure when I was doing the research that it wasn't Stephen Baldwin, but it's not.
Yeah, because people know he's very, very conservative. He's, you know, he's definitely Republican leaning, and it's pretty funny because Alec Baldwin is not. He's like
yes.
on the opposite end of the spectrum. So, okay, go ahead with the list.
No, that's a really good point. The founder of Amway. James Dobson, Focus on the Family, Jerry Falwell, Edwin Fuller, the founder of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Gentry, who is an activist on behalf or a lobbyist on behalf of Koch Industries, Larry Klayman, founder of Judicial Watch, Wayne LaPierre, spokesman for the NRA. The producer, I cannot pronounce this gentleman's last name, I apologize, but he is the producer of the Clinton Chronicles. And in the Clinton Chronicles is where we come up with the Clinton body count. So, like I said before, folks, when I was looking into this, I started to ask questions. Because, like I explained before in their mission statement, their job is to inject their values and promote their values into positions of with people with positions of power in our nation and also with us. The more people they can get to follow their agenda, the better. And the information that comes out of their camp, in my opinion, is propaganda. It's no better than the information that comes out of the CFR.
Wow.
So we have Oliver North. Ralph Reed, former head of the Christian Coalition.
Hello? Oh, I think we lost Suzanne. Hello? Well, it looks like we lost her. I don't know if we're going to get her back.
I'm right here.
It went dead for a minute.
Of course it went dead for a minute, because I'm telling you something that's really, really flipping serious.
Oh, so they're listening.
They're listening to me, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not a paranoid person. And I don't normally talk about, you know, oh, my God, the NSA is listening to me, so you have to listen to me.
Well, we know they're listening because they legislated it, so they're listening. That's for sure. If they legislated it, they're giving themselves permission to do it, so...
This is a very secret organization. They only meet 3 times a year, and no one knows where they are. And we're not even sure that they meet 3 times a year anymore, because the last that it was told that they have meetings 3 times a year was in the 1990s. And the last time that anyone got a hold of a list of attendees – has been several years. So we're not sure. What I did was I looked up information, going back into old articles. Thank God people put things from the 80s into the internet, you know, scanned all of those old articles that were, you know, written in print, because there was some incredible information. They were talking about the Council for National Policy a lot during the 80s, and then it stopped. And then they spoke about it a little bit in the late 90s, and then a smidgen in 2010. And then since then, it's been dead.
Wow.
Yes. They don't like press, and they don't like people knowing about this. Because I'm going to tie this, I did not forget about John McCain. I'm going to tie this into John McCain, and I'm going to tie this into the fake revolutions that we've seen all across the world, including the Ukraine. Okay, I'm going to tie this all together. I'm going to tie this into the Bundy Ranch.
Okay.
Everything.
Good.
That's why I said when I started looking into this, it just completely blew my head off. I said, okay, what is actually true? What is actually real? When we hear the conspiracy theories, when we hear the right wing theories and things coming out of Wayne LaPierre's mouth, things coming out of Larry Klayman's mouth, things coming out of Pat Buchanan's mouth, or Stanley Monteith, who shows up regularly on certain people's shows that I won't mention their name, but I'm pretty sure you might know who I'm talking about, Paul Craig Roberts. Okay?
Right, right.
These are people who are revered in our circles. And
right.
They are connected to the CNP. The CNP is the right-wing conservative arm. If you think about it as a tree trunk with two branches, on the left is the CFR, on the right is the CNP. They're both connected to the same tree, but they have their own propaganda, their own agenda, and it seems like they're battling each other. This is the answer to the left-right paradigm. This is the answer to the Democrat-Republican fighting that we always have. This is the answer. The CNP controls the right, and the CFR controls the left. All right? So people who, politicians and members of the, quote, right-wing conservative movement, who have supported and participated and spoken at events funded for and provided by the CNPR, Eric Erickson, who is the chief editor of Red State magazine, redstate.com.
Right.
Louis Berner, who is the managing director of Bain Capital. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal.
Right.
John Allison, president and CEO of the Cato Institute. Fred Barnes, executive director of the Weekly Standard. Steve Green, president of Hobby Lobby Stores. I know recently the Republican conservative GOP got up in arms and was defending Hobby Lobby over, I think it was wages, and can't remember. Jim DeMint, president-elect of the Heritage Foundation.
Wow.
Michael Meddev, syndicated talk show host and author. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. Pat Buchanan, and Eric Prince, founder of Blackwater, which is now called Academy.
Right. And it don't they have the name also of XEZ?
I think that they do.
Yeah.
I know that they tried to change it. I know that they were complaining that no one would be able to pronounce Academy. They would say Academia, so they came up with a couple of letters. Because we're stupid, and we look at pictures. Anyone seen the movie Idiocracy, where he goes to the hospital and he's trying to describe to the nurse what's wrong with him, and she's looking at a bunch of pictures, and he just demonstrates what's wrong with him, so she presses down on a picture, and then he's treated for that. That's basically what we have there.
Wow. Yeah, it's getting to that point, huh?
Yeah. In 2004, the New York Times reported that the CNP is, quote, a little-known club of a few hundred of the most powerful conservatives in the country that have met behind closed doors and undisclosed locations for a confidential conference to strategize about how to turn the country to the right. Steve Baldwin, executive director of the CNP, was quoted as saying his organization, quote, controls everything in the world.
So I'm wondering if these people ever go to the Bohemian Grove.
Well, here's something interesting about the Bohemian Grove. Nothing is ever exposed unless it's advantageous to expose it.
Right.
We all know that, and we all accept that. There is a little bit of confusion about the person who brought the video of Bohemian Grove and all of that. That person was invited to attend the event, so it's not like they busted in. The statue is not a statue of Moloch.
Okay.
It's a statue of Minerva.
It's
also
oh, okay.
on the seal of the California seal, their state seal. The Bohemian Grove, the Bilderberg Group, these are happening, but they're not, it's like the middlemen getting together and having a meeting. And when they want you to know what they want you to know, then they make it accessible for you. And so these things are accessible to us. The CNP is not accessible, and there's a reason for that. They do not want people to know that what is coming out of the mouths of people like Stanley Monteith, Paul Craig Roberts, Pat Buchanan, these people show up regularly on the Alex Jones Show.
Mm.
Even Ron Paul.
Yeah, Ron Paul's been on quite a bit, yeah.
They don't want you to know that the agendas that they are supporting are coming directly out of the CNP.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they let you know that, then it's no different than the agendas that we hear coming out of the CFR. And we would have to, the audience would have to, if you were a conscientious objector,
mm-hmm.
you would have to take a look at this and say, well, somewhere in the middle of all of this propaganda is the truth.
Right.
And that's where we actually stand. Now, because the producer of the Clinton Chronicles, where we get the Clinton body count from Hillary Clinton, I had to ask myself, if this man is a speaker and contributor to the CNP, how accurate is the Clinton Chronicles and how accurate is the Clinton body count?
Hmm. That's an interesting question.
It is, and because it disturbed me to see how many – Larry Klayman, he just sued in court for the NSA, and he was denied by the Supreme Court. Now, Larry Klayman is a member of the CNP. So what is his agenda behind what he's doing?
Yeah.
No different than the agenda of people who are Hillary Clinton, who came out and said, I'm so glad that the CFR moved right down the street so I know what to think. I don't have so far to go now. I can just walk down the block, and you tell me what to say, and I say it. And she's on camera saying this. So when Eric Erickson, when you see things from Red State or Pat Buchanan talking or Wayne LaPierre or Jerry Falwell or James Dobson or Pat Robertson or Stanley Monteith, how much of this, or Jim DeMint, how much of this is rhetoric from the CNP?
Right.
Now, if we're caught up in a propaganda war, and it made sense to me because that was one of the first things I thought of when Hillary Clinton was sitting before Congress saying we're losing the information war.
Yeah, that was so transparent. That just put her in a really, really transparent spot. Because now people believed that they are, in fact, manipulating the media, you know?
Well, if you are part of the CFR and you and your organization is putting out propaganda, and you have another organization come up in the early 80s who is pushing the other side's propaganda, and now they're organized, and now they have tons of members, lots of money behind them, you will lose the information war.
Yeah.
You will have a dent in your effect and your control over what people believe because you're not the only guy on the block anymore.
And plus, money talks and bullshit walks.
Exactly. And that was one of my questions. Because recently Ron Paul came out and was very excited. And as a mother, he's a father, he I understand the excitement. He said that his son is a front runner for the GOP nomination for president, hopeful in 2016. So I asked myself, okay, I know that Senator Rand Paul has spoken and collaborated with and worked with the CNP. So is he being pushed and propagated up by members of the CNP in media? And by golly, he is.
So what is your take after hearing all of this? What is your take on the elections in 2016?
The CNP has a very, very violent agenda.
Okay.
And that's where the Bundy Ranch comes into play.
Right.
So I'm going to take you back in time to the Iran-Contra scandal. And one of the gentlemen who was involved with the Iran-Contra scandal actually went to South America and trained the Contras in forming a militia, took that blueprint, and decided, and even wrote a book about this, he decided that this would be a great blueprint to bring to the United States to start a militia organization here in the United States. Because if they could do so well with the groups down in South America and create militias and until they were exposed, be so successful at it, their idea was they could take it here to America and create a militia or multiple militias that would organize and work same as they did with the Contras here in the United States, and that would be a formidable force against what the CFR and the Democratic wall covering is doing. So that's where Bundy comes in, because we saw how quickly Oath Keepers and other militia groups came to the rescue of a gentleman who is expounding CNP rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And just in my lifetime, and I was a little girl, when the Iran-Contra affair happened, I have seen a large uprising, and I hate to use that word because it has such strange and negative connotations, but a large uprising of militia organizations who happen to also agree with rhetoric that's coming out of the mouths of supporters and members of the CNP. So their blueprint they have brought here to the United States, and they have created their own army. And they are in the process of bringing in more members of their army.
They also have the School of the Americas in Georgia, which is basically known to be a school where a lot of foreign diplomats and military come to be trained on how to create uprisings in their own countries.
Absolutely. Now, I wrote several years ago about the International Republican Institute, and this is when I first got the idea that somehow the Republicans are involved in these fake revolutions, because it's the International Republican Institute. And guess who's on the board of directors?
Who's that?
John McCain.
Of course. He likes to stir the shit pot, doesn't he?
And he's very photogenic. We've seen him with members of the Free Syrian Army. We've seen him with members of the opposition in Egypt. And we've seen him most recently with members of the opposition, the Nazi opposition, by the way.
Yeah, in Ukraine.
The white supremacists. It's amazing, you know, but think about it.
We are backing the wrong people in the Ukraine. And I couldn't help but remember the photo op that Hillary did with Pussy Riot when they came to New York. I guess they came to do a speaking engagement with a human rights organization. And Hillary got in there and got a picture with Pussy Riot. And as soon as she did that, as soon as I saw that, I said, you know what? I was supporting Pussy Riot the whole time they were in jail. I'm going, doesn't this just take the cake, you know?
Because they present the mascots that we are supposed to revere, and they do so eloquently that we don't understand that we're being lied to.
Right.
Because we woke up. We now get it. So we can see the propaganda when we watch mainstream television. We don't think that. Here's a little indicator, folks. If you emotionally react to the information that you're receiving, that's an indicator that you're being lied to and propagandized to.
Right.
So as soon as you feel that emotion, like, oh, my God, I can't believe they're doing this, or that's horrible, or they should be, take a step back because you are about to be sucked into the whirling dervish that is propaganda. And all you have to do is take a step back and sit down logically and say, okay, that makes me upset, but what's actually happening here?
Yeah.
So with the International Republican Institute, which John McCain is a member of the CNP, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I would expect so.
So the International Republican Institute, the National Endowment for Democracy, the Ford Foundation, the RAND Corporation, they have all been funding this gentleman named Gene Sharp, who wrote a thesis paper which then was published in 1973, From Dictatorship to Democracy, A Conceptual Framework for Liberation. Now, what they did, and you can look this up in OccupyCorporatism.com. And if you don't want to read the article, just scroll down to the bottom and watch the 52-minute video. It's from the International Republican Institute themselves, and it's talking about everything that I'm about to tell you right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they're very proud of it, by the way.
Yeah.
So they went to Serbia in the late 1989 and in 2003, they went to Serbia and they started infiltrating the OCTOR movement, which was a nonviolent resistance based on Gene Sharp's book, From Dictatorship to Democracy, where they used, and I think you might recognize some of these tactics or some of your listeners might recognize these tactics. They would bang pots and pans during the 6 o'clock news in the streets so nobody could actually listen to what was being said because most people didn't have central heating or central air, and so they had their windows open.
Wow. Okay.
They had the symbol of the fist and the symbol of the peace sign as a way to communicate with each other and as a way to show a force. The fist is a very, very strong symbol.
Mm-hmm.
They used color schemes. The revolutions by yellow and red and green. They would use slogans that were basically could be construed to anything, but it was directed to the disenfranchisement of the people against their government. And rightfully so, these governments are absolutely tyrannical. But when they take our disenfranchisement and our frustration at our government and use it against us to overthrow our government so that they can install a patsy, that's a problem. They also would put women and children in the front of the protests because back then in 1998, the police were not going to shoot or beat up women, children, or pregnant women. They would hold mirrors to the police who would show up to stop them, to show the officers what they look like in their gear. They would hand them flowers as a show of peace.
Right. All of that's been done before. It's interesting.
It's been done recently, too.
Yeah, these are all visuals and memes and things that are familiar to us that have been in the struggle for a long time.
And Occupy Wall Street movement used them.
Right.
And they were used in Egypt, and they were used in Tunisia, and they were used in Serbia, and they were used in Libya, and they are being used in the Ukraine, and they are being used in Venezuela, and they are being used in Thailand.
Wow. I wonder if they're using the bull with the ballet dancer on top of it, because that was a definitely unique meme, but I've never seen anybody but Occupy Wall Street use that one, and I thought it was so effective.
It's something that Gene Sharp explained. He had 198 ways to topple your government using nonviolent resistance, and what the IRI, the International Republican Institute, when they finally got into the inner circle, because it was a nameless, faceless group, just like Occupy Wall Street,
right?
Who actually had a hierarchy and a leader, because all movements do.
Right.
They didn't infiltrate in the way that we understand infiltration. They sat down and spoke with them and asked them what they were doing and why they were doing these certain things and where they got their playbook from, and that's where they found Gene Sharp. And since then, they've given him a nice little cushy institute. He's founded the Albert Einstein Institute, which was funded by the Rand Corporation and Ford and the IRI and the National Endowment for Democracy, which, by the way, the National Endowment for Democracy is where they get all the money for
right.
all of these fake revolutions. You and I pay for them to topple governments in other countries. Why? Why do they do this? Here's what happens every single time the day after the revolution, which, by the way, there's a lot of talk here in the United States about revolution. We don't talk about the day after. The reason why we don't talk about the day after is because what I'm about to tell you. The day after the revolution comes the stability operations with Blackwater, who is a member of the CNP, and DynCorp, and the U.S. State Department.
You know that DynCorp was really after me for about 2 years.
I did not know that.
I was at the time, I'll just very quickly so you can get back to your story, at the time when I was doing Cynthia McKinney's social networks, I was also working with a patient, and he was located in Pasco County here in Florida, north of Tampa. And he was an old man, deaf, and I would go over and spend 3 full days with him, and that was my job. I worked through an agency. And he was almost totally deaf. I'd be in one part of the house, I'd be in the other. And there was 3 foreclosed homes around the house. So if anything had happened to me in that house, nobody would have known for a long time. But I started to get the anonymous calls, and they came over and over again, 2 in the morning, 5 in the morning, 7 in the morning. Usually when I was sleeping, and I had a horrible premonition that I was being watched, and I was frightened. And I'd have to call my Leon here. He said, anything's a weapon. He said, just remember that. He said, plant some weapons around the house, things that you can grab and hit and fight with if you have to. And I did that. And these calls continued and continued. Even after this patient died, they started to call me here at home. And it was always on my cell. And usually when I would, it came right up on the caller ID, DynCorp, and it was a Fort Worth number where their headquarters is. So I filed FCC complaints. I called the secretary and told her I was filing an FCC complaint. And eventually the calls stopped. But whoever was calling me was actually speaking to me and saying, I didn't mean to call you. I'm calling from Afghanistan. I'm trying to reach my wife. And I go, well, you already know you got the wrong number. Why do you keep calling me? And then it go, oh, you're a bitch, and hang up. And I thought, oh, my God. It was a nightmare. And I'm just glad it ended. But,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then somebody else told me, don't worry about it. They got a bunch of suits sitting in a room making calls and harassing people.
They do.
Yeah. So
They really do. They have CIA trolls and DIA trolls and FBI trolls. They really do. I've written many articles about this. People get paid 8 hours a day to sit there and troll the websites, comment threads, social media, make disparaging phone calls like the ones you received. That's their job when they get into governmental service. That's what they are hired to do.
Yeah. It was something that I remembered, and shoot, now that I've said this and put it out on the radio, who knows, maybe the calls will start again, but at least I'm not living in that area, and I'm not around foreclosed homes, and there's always people around me, and I even live next door to two cops now, so my fear level is not the same.
That's good.
But that was an experience that I'll never forget. And, you know, at the time, this was around the time when Cynthia McKinney was going through her own troubles, where she had ended up in an Israeli jail. And that was the same weekend Michael Jackson died, when she was actually incarcerated. She was on a free Gaza boat taking supplies to Gaza. And the boat was overturned, and she was taken to an Israeli prison where she was for about 7 days. So it was about the same time when all of that started, but it continued for 2 years. So,
yeah, she is a testament that there are good people in government.
Right.
There are good people in office. There are good people in your city councils. There's good people in your state house and your state representatives, Senate and House. It's not all bad. They want you to think that everybody is in on the take. Not everybody is.
Right.
We need to find those Cynthia McKinneys.
Right.
And help them get bigger and louder and
right.
more influential. We really do. Because with the CFR and the CNP, we're kind of up someone's creek without you know what.
Yeah, and there's people that are running that are not taking the money. They're not bought, and I encourage people, if you're looking at local races, look at the ones who just truly want to serve and haven't raised the money, because in this day and age, voters are looking at who can raise the most money as a testament to someone who's a viable candidate. And my take on that is your candidate is electable when you vote for them. That word electable is a stupid made-up word. If you vote for that candidate, they're electable. Being electable doesn't mean you can raise, you know, $200,000. For a local race. That has nothing to do with it. And I ran for the Hillsborough County Soil and Water Board. I paid $300 for my campaign, and I got over 82,000 votes. So it can be done.
They want people to think that it's about money.
Right.
They
right.
want people to think that if you didn't raise the money, then, like you said, you're not electable. Anyone is electable.
That's right. That's right. And you have to be not bought. And you have to insist to the voters. I think the voters are getting a little smarter now, because they know that there's trash up on the hill, you know, or in their local offices, their local, you know, city halls and county commissions. So now you just look at the people that have not raised the money. And then ask them sincerely, why do you want to serve? And
that's a good point. Why do they want? It's a public servant position.
Yeah. Why do you want to serve? What is your intention? Do you have a vision for our city or our county or our state or, you know, the United States itself? What's your vision, and how would you like your constituents to help you get there? You know, that's what voters should be saying. And then support that person. You know, it doesn't take much to get, for instance, to the State House, a couple $1,000, $3,000. You know, you could get that with a couple of potluck dinners or a couple spaghetti dinners if they're well promoted, and get that person up to the State House. You know, because if they can't come up with the $3,000 out of their own pocket, and a lot of these people do that. A lot of these people running for office will put in from their own pocket, even though they're not supposed to. If it's $3,000, they'll just pay to get on the ballot. That's it. Here in Florida, it costs $10,000 at least to get on the federal ballot to go to D.C. To go to Tallahassee, it's a percentage of your constituents. There's a value on that. So I think in this particular county, it's like $2,000 or $3,000 to go to the State House. So it's not that much money. But if you've got to raise $200,000, $300,000, that's extravagant and that's stupid. And what are you going to spend that money on? Are you going to spend that on, you know, getting food or medical care or supplies for the homeless, which is much more needed in this county than anything else, you know? So people need to think about that when they're looking at these candidates, instead of looking to see how much money they can raise, because that is not a meter on how to judge who is going to legislate the best.
And look at who they're associated with. When I look at how many people are associated with Steve Forbes from Forbes magazine is a member of the CNP. Rand Paul spoke in 2013 at Freedom Fest, and he was invited by founder Mark Suskin, or Skozin, I'm sorry. Mr. Skozin frequently speaks at the CNP and writes articles for them, and he is also the producer of Freedom Fest. Now, he claims that Freedom Fest, on their website, it states that they are an independent, nonpartisan, non-affiliated with any organization or any think tank. That's just not true, because he's a member of the CNP.
Mm.
House Representative Tim Jordan, who is on the Republican Study Committee, is also a member of the CNP. Sarah Palin has spoken at a past event in 2013 endorsing Rand Paul at the CNP.
Hmm. That's interesting.
The list is incredible. The group for Concerned Women for America was founded and chaired by Beverly LaHaye, whose husband is Tim LaHaye.
Yeah. Tim LaHaye.
And she endorsed Rand Paul for president going all the way back to 2010 for the GOP primary.
Hmm. So we have to take a look at who we're voting for in 2016, really do the research. It really gets to my craw when I hear stuff like, oh, this will be interesting, we'll have a race between Bush and Clinton, because it's widely thought here in Florida that Jeb Bush is going to run. One thing that's dangerous about Jeb Bush is he's the smartest of all the Bushes. So that's a really scary thought, but he's a very, very smart man. But a lot of people, they'll probably rewrite a lot of his family troubles, like when his wife was coming back from somewhere and had a whole bunch of unclaimed jewelry and goods that she didn't want to pay duty on. And then his daughter is a well-known crackhead, and had been arrested multiple times while Jeb Bush was governor here in Florida. So they're going to rewrite all that and really sanitize those stories so nobody can find them on the Internet. But he's going to run for president, and then of course the media is saying, "Oh yeah, Bush and Clinton, that's going to be an interesting race." And I'm going, "You stupid idiots! That's been done before. What's new about that?"
Because it's theater.
Yeah.
It's a show.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's the CNP versus the CFR. Okay. And
right.
Whoever wins, the other guys beat those guys in the media and badmouth them the whole entire time that they're in the White House, and then the whole thing starts over again when it comes time for elections.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we're seeing here, folks.
Yeah.
How much of what's going on is actually true, and how much of it is CNP or CFR propaganda, or how much of it is a nugget of truth wrapped around in a lot of CNP or CFR propaganda, is something that we really have to be stewards of our own research to decipher.
Right.
And I'm not just saying that because I'm a journalist and I provide source links, and I would be put out of business if everybody started doing research. Absolutely not. Folks, when I looked into the Council for National Policy, my jaw hit the floor because I realized that when you get the pocket constitution from Alex Jones, it comes from the Heritage Foundation.
Hmm. Right.
The Heritage Foundation founded, helped put the money to set up the CNP and continues to be a staunch supporter. When you hear Larry Klayman, or Pat Buchanan, or Stanley Monteith, or Paul Craig Roberts, or Sarah Palin, or
mm-hmm.
Rand Paul, or Ron Paul.
Right.
You're listening to the CNP. We have a huge problem, and we don't understand. We jumped from the frying pan into the pot is the problem. We say mainstream media sucks, we're not going to listen to them anymore, and then we jump to alternative media without doing any discernment, any logical reasoning, any research ourselves. We just blindly believe everything because it's new and it's different and it must be the truth. But folks, that stuff was being orchestrated and plotlined and scripted out long before you showed up, and you just showed up in the middle of the movie. So you can't tell that the credits were rolling in the front of it because you got there after they told you who produced the movie and who's starring in it and who wrote the screenplay, and you're just going along watching, wow, this looks really real. This is more real than what I know. This must be true. But we cannot rely on that mode of thinking anymore. It's getting us into too much trouble. We're not making good decisions. We're making bad decisions. We're making emotional decisions. And we have people in positions of power that are detrimental to our very well-being.
Right.
Because if the CNP has their way, there will be a revolution here in the United States. And they will take over with stability operations, with the IMF and the World Bank coming in to siphon out our resources, and with a patsy. Either a single person like Mohamed Morsi or an entire group of people like the National Transitional Council that they installed in Libya or the Syrian Transitional Council that they're trying to install in Syria as soon as they get Assad out of the way.
Wow. We've got 2 minutes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So let me just ask you very quickly, what stories should we be watching for the next week? What should we be looking at?
They are really pushing for internet freedom.
Right.
And I said this in the beginning when I saw Edward Snowden, that wouldn't it be funny if the corporations became our saviors to saving us from the NSA spying? Well, guess what? That's starting to come to fruition. And I said it as a joke. I really didn't mean it, but I see absolute evidence of that happening right now with the recent Edward Snowden meeting at the Reset the Net, who is an organization supported by Google, Mozilla, Reddit, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Not that all of these places are bad. I mean, I've quoted the Electronic Frontier Foundation. However, Greenpeace is an NGO. We need to be careful because the corporations are positioning themselves to be our saviors and say, well, if the government isn't going to protect your data, then we will. And we don't want corporatocracy.
Right.
We don't want it in any, so we need to be careful. We need to start really doing our own research. And whenever any information comes at us, stop, think, and do the research and come to a logical conclusion before you act on anything.
Exactly.
Anything at all.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and we're definitely going to have you come back again. It's been a lively 2 hours, almost 2 hours. And everybody, if you want to check Suzanne's sites out, go to the usindependent.com, and the other one is Investigative Headline News. This is OccupyCorporatism.com. So check out those two websites. They're wonderful for getting aggregated news and news on many, many different topics all at one time. And, Suzanne, thank you so much. And we're going to close. We're going to try to finish that song with Anna Popovic, Can You Stand the Heat? I don't think we're going to get to the end of it, but enjoy. And good night, everyone.
First impression, baby, can you stand the heat? Turn a seat with a dry throat, so they still are shaking ease. Boys all so you mean securely, a hell of a freeze. When I come across, yes, I got you now, I'll just keep it a beat. It's all upon the first impression, baby, can you stand the heat? I got high expectations, and I'm hungry for more. What did you put me down the line? Show me what I'm in for. Can you stand the heat? I got high expectations and I'm hungry for more. What did you put me down?